The Takeaway is supported by the Rockefeller Foundation, whose transportation initiative is promoting equitable and sustainable development in communities across the country. More at rockfound.org. You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning, everyone. In a few minutes coming up, but we're going to start your Monday with a very special story reading from some very special voices. Stay tuned for that. But an amazing story out of Russia, as expected, but still spectacular to behold. Prime Minister Vladimir Putin has announced he will run again for president next year. Over the weekend at a party convention in Moscow, current Russian President Dmitry Medvedev said he would step aside for Putin. It's long been expected. Presidential elections are scheduled for March. Edward Lucas is the international editor for The Economist and author of The New Cold War, Putin's Russia and the Threat to the West. Ed, good morning.
Good morning.
So is this the prelude to Putin, president for life in Russia?
I think not for life, but certainly for 6 years, and quite likely for another 6 years after that, because while he's been sitting in the prime minister's chair, Russia changed its constitution to make the presidential term longer, and that will take him up to the age of 70 or 71. And I think the big point here is exactly as you said in the introduction, it's both amazing and expected. It's extraordinary that this not very well-known bureaucrat who, back in the 1990s, was just one of a cast of hundreds that we've saw in on the backstages of Russian politics, has leapt into the top job and stayed there, whether it's called president or prime minister. And it's an astonishing political story. But it's also, I think, very depressing because it means that Russia continues to suffer the kind of stagnation, the corruption, and all the other, the lack of modernization that is so depressing there. And it's also bad for Russia's neighbors, because they feel the cold breath of the bear breathing over their shoulders.
In terms of the broad electorate, if we can call it that, of Russia, do they view Putin as a Perón figure, a cult of personality that when he goes, there's really no sort of successor? Or is this a party that is basically ruling with Putin at the head?
At the risk of sounding flippant, I think this is a real example of one man, one vote. It's Mr. Putin's the man. It's his vote that counts. It's perhaps the smallest electorate in history of him and Mr. Medvedev, with him doing the deciding and Mr. Medvedev doing the agreeing. But I think you've got a very good point there, that the Russian people feel very perplexed by this. So on the one hand, if you ask them, do you think your country's well run? They say no. They're fed up with the transport, with the public services, with all the different things that the state's meant to provide and doesn't. On the other hand, if you say, do you think there's an alternative to Putin? They say no. And I think Mr. Putin is, in a way, very lucky. He's had high oil prices for most of his time as prime minister and then president, which has given him a lot of money to oil the wheels with. And the opposition looks very weak. The opposition leaders who we sometimes hear in the West don't cut much ice inside Russia, so there isn't a strong alternative. And, of course, with his control of the media, he makes sure that even there was an alternative, it doesn't get much airtime.
Talking to Edward Lucas, international editor for The Economist and author of The New Cold War, Putin's Russia and the Threat to the West, Vladimir Putin announcing over the weekend that he will stand for a president once again, an election he's likely to win that will be held in March. So you mentioned oil prices there. Is there a oil price level below which Putin's popularity is unsustainable with the sort of largesse that he can hand out in the form of cash?
Over the last few years, they've had about $1 trillion in excess oil and gas revenues coming in, and that's a huge windfall. And although a lot of it's been wasted and a lot of it's been stolen, a lot of it's also piled up in the reserves. So they can ride out a few soft patches in the oil price. But one of the problems with this very corrupt political machine over which he presides is that it needs not just a high oil price, but actually a rising one, because appetites get bigger. And so when I was in Russia back in the late 1990s as a correspondent, people thought Russia needed an oil price of about $20 a barrel.
Wow.
In order to break even. Now it's about 70 to break even. Some people think it needs to be in three figures in order for the machine to function properly. So it's getting bigger all the time, the oil price they need. And of course, the oil price is not staying at that level. If we get a big global slowdown, which certainly looks likely at the moment, one of the things that affects is the demand for oil. And that will hit Russia very badly because its oil industry is actually very uncompetitive. Mm. It's very corrupt, very high costs, very incompetent.
Ed Lucas, international editor for The Economist. Before we go, Is Putin, and just quickly here, is Putin a beloved figure in any sense? I mean, could you imagine him reading bedtime stories to little kids in kindergartens, being a character in a kid's book?
I don't think so. He falls more into the category of leader who's partly feared, partly respected, but I don't think liked. And that reflects a deep Russian political culture. You don't love the Tsar, you just do what he says.
So it might be in a comic book, but certainly not a children's book. Edward Lucas, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Edward Lucas is international editor for The Economist and author of The New Cold War, Putin's Russia and the Threat to the West. Putin standing for the presidency in Russia, an election he's likely to win in March. More of The Takeaway online. Head to our site or go over to the Facebook page, facebook.com/The Takeaway. We asked listeners for their favorite piece by children's author Shel Silverstein, who yesterday had a birthday, and he's got a new book coming out celebrating his work, Everything on It. And also, you guys responded so well when we did a story about Dr. Seuss's new book, which also comes out in the next couple of weeks. We decided to ask for some submissions, and we got two fantastic ones. Our favorites come from within the Takeaway family, Slater and Zari, the nephew and niece of our own D.C. correspondent, Todd Zwillick.
My name is Slater. I'm 4 years old. This one's for you, Uncle Todd. Hi. I cannot go to school today, said the little piggy on my head. I have the measles and the mumps and cramps and rust. My mouth is wet. My throat is dry. I'm going blind my right eye. My tonsils have those big and rock. My temperature's 108.
My name is Zari. How old am I? My name is four. My name is Zari, and I'm 4 years old. I truck and I went to the dentist. He sat down one of the chairs, and the dentist says, why does it fit through the wire? And the crocodile says, the terrible ache in my tooth. He opened his jaw, so white, the dentist climbed right inside, and the dentist said, this is so fun.
Any wonder why he's a classic, Shel Silverstein? That's Zari and Slater, four-year-old niece and nephew to our own D.C. correspondent Todd Zwillick, reading The Crocodile's Toothache and Sick. Those are their favorite passages from author Shel Silverstein, whose birthday would have been yesterday. Share your own. Head to facebook.com/thetakeaway or call 877-8-MY-TAKE. That one was for good old Uncle Todd.